Well, I hope you all had a wonderful time. Wasn't it wonderful walking in those gardens and those fun animals? This is my mother-in-law. She's come for this afternoon. Lovely Millie. Many of you maybe remember her from days at Hood's Port, and then they moved down to Olympia many years before, but she didn't want to get up early. I don't blame her. So I'm glad she's here.
Sure. Hey, Millie's 92. Oh.
What?
What? 92. She
told
me.
Oh, sorry. Just a birthday. 93 years old, and she still teaches the Bible study we were at it yesterday. So not, Millie's on top of it, and she pretty much runs anything with if you need any help with your cell phone or any technology or anything like that. I learn a lot of things from her. She's very helpful. Let me just say it was a delight for me to get to talk to anybody that I got the opportunity to during the break. I heard quite a few testimonies, and that was what was really special to me because that's what we talked about the first time. But I got to hear your stories, and is it going to stay there? And I loved being able to hear them. It was such a treat. Also, what a fun thing. Harry was in Albania at the very beginning, so she knows the stories that I know from way back then in those horribly hard days. It's so different now. You would not recognize it. And then Lisa was in Vanuatu. So, gosh, from one side of the world to another. So, yeah, that's really fun for me. In fact, speaking of one side of the world to the other, I have little pieces of my jewelry that represent different things. And so the one I have on today is the pearl is from Tahiti, and that was one of the islands that we worked with in the Pacific area. And then the Star of David, and we were in Israel. So from one side of the world to the other. So that's what that reminds me of. And so here I have people from all over. And then the testimonies, you guys, I loved hearing your stories. So thank you for sharing. And I hope we have more time to be able to share. Let me just start in prayer, okay? Oh Lord, I just am so grateful that you are the creator of such beauty, not just of the beautiful gardens around here, but these beautiful lives that are in front of me. You have created each one, and you have uniquely worked in each one of us to bring us along the journey that you have for us. So we thank you, Lord, and I just pray that we have a sweet time together right now. In your name, amen. Okay, look where I'm going to start. Anybody remember this book? Ah, good, Becky, remember that one. A Pig and a Pancake. Well, let me tell you the story on this one. This pig is off to get a pancake, but he gets distracted along the way and doesn't quite make it to his destination without going through a whole bunch of things. That's kind of the theme where we're going today. So I'll let you know that on the story. As we go on our destination, our journeys in life, remember we talked about going out, just like the Exodus, then entering the wilderness times, the wilderness times, the time of life where we have all these different experiences in our lives. That's those distraction times, or that's like the little pig that's running around trying to figure out. Still a destination somewhere. And remember, we talked about that back in Hebrews with Abraham. He's going out, not knowing where he's going, but he's got this goal of going to the city that God is the architect and builder of. So on our way this time in our session together, I'm going to talk about destinations. I don't know why the Lord laid two stories on my mind to share. So many different stories I could have shared, but I'm going to share about being hindered along the way or roadblocked along the way. Not that any of you have ever had that. Point A to point B, want to get there, want to just jump in an airplane, fly, and God's got a meandering way. This is on pilgrimage. You have to walk one step at a time, and that's what we're doing in this journey. It's one step at a time in life. Of going through what God has for us. So either in the journey, on the way to the destination, there's a lot of things that happen. once. I heard your stories. And then not only can you be hindered, but, you know, sometimes you get weary along the journey and you don't want to continue. So I'm going to tell you about both of those. But first of all, I want to open up and read to you from Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 7. Now, remember, I told you that I went to all these different countries, had 8 international moves. And so it was a delight to me to be able to find this verse in Deuteronomy 2, verse 7. Came across it. Could probably quote it, but I'll just look it up here. So this is what it says. Now, I want to remind you, this is at the very end of Moses' life, and he's talking to all the people that have gone through this 40 years of wilderness. So this is at the very end of the journey. And he says to them, verse 7, "For the Lord your God has blessed you in all that you have done. He has known your wanderings through the great wilderness. These 40 years, the Lord your God has been with you. You have not lacked a thing." I lived overseas for 40 years, so it was a delight to see this verse. 40 years. And the Lord, I know, did bless us. There were so many blessings along the way. But the thing that really caught my attention is that he knows our wandering. He has known our wanderings. And he is with us. His presence goes with us. Isaiah 33 says, "My presence goes with you, and I will give you rest." And it's true. In the midst of the journey that can be hard and difficult, is there something that needs to be turned here?
Don't know. Maybe that will stay.
Okay, I'm not used to these microphones. His presence went with me, and his presence never leaves us, or he never forsakes us. So even though we're not always aware of it, he is with us, and he's known our wanderings, and we have not lacked a thing. Now, I could spend all day telling you the amazing ways that God has provided for us. Really fun stories of the way that we didn't think that we would have certain things that God provides, and I know this is true for all of you, so that might be something you'll be thinking of to discuss at your table at the end of just some of the ways that God has blessed you, that he's known your wanderings, that he's been with you, and that you've not lacked a thing. But I want to start with reading in, I'm going to move this out of the way because I don't have quite the space. So where we're going to go and spend the majority, I think, of this time right now in this moment is in Exodus 13, 17. Through 14, verse 3. So if you want to look in your Bible, you can. If you want to listen along the way. Now, this is at the beginning of the journey. Remember, I told you Moses talked about this at the end of his journey. But at the beginning of his journey, before they've arrived at their destination at Mount Sinai, this is what the Lord says. And chapter 13, verse 17. I'll just read through this. "Now, when Pharaoh had let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, even though it was near. For God said, the people might change their mind when they see war and return to Egypt. Hence, God led the people around the way of the wilderness to the Red Sea, and the sons of Israel went up in martial array from the land of Egypt. Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had made the sons of Israel solemnly swear, saying, God will thoroughly take care of you, and you shall carry my bones from here with you. They then set out from Sukkot and camped in Etam on the edge of the wilderness. The Lord was going before them in a pillar, a cloud by day to lead them on the way, and a pillar of fire by night to give them light, that they may travel by day and night. He did not take them away. He did not take away the pillar of cloud by day, nor the pillar of fire by night from the people. Now, chapter 14. Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, tell the sons of Israel to turn back and camp at Pe'hahirot, between Migdol and the sea, and you camp in front of Baal-Zephon, opposite of the sea. For Pharaoh will say to the sons of Israel, they are wandering aimlessly in the land, and the wilderness has shut them in. At the end of the life of Moses, he said, God has known our wanderings. At the beginning, before the journey, he says, Pharaoh is going to say to you, you're wandering aimlessly in the wilderness. Now, I don't know about you all, but I've been at places in my life where I wonder if I've wandered a little bit aimlessly and trying to figure things out. That also talks about being perplexed or confused during those times. Anybody been in those places in life? I think we all have understood those things along the way. But I thought it was very interesting that God would have warned him that it's not going to be always really easy. And not only are you going to feel like wandering aimlessly, there's going to be people that are saying, what in the world is he doing, going here, going there, whatever they're involved in. But God has known our wanderings. What's interesting in this part of the chapter also is it says that God did not lead them the near way. And so often we wish that, oh, I would just like the answer to prayer just like that, the story to happen over and done with. There's prayers that I've had gone on for years that I haven't seen answered. So these things go on, but we still continue to walk step by step along the way. Be thinking of those times that you can share with your table in different ones. Now, this is what's interesting. A blessing of the times of living overseas is we had opportunity to learn the language. Not that I ever really learned it, but I learned some German, to speak some German, and when I lived in Austria. And then when I was in Israel, I studied Hebrew. My husband has a degree in Semitic linguistics. And so I now still use Hebrew probably almost every day when I study the word, because understanding it in the original language to understand the word. So this place that they stopped is a really interesting one. Pe'hahirot. It's in chapter 14, verse 2. And in Hebrew, the word pe is your mouth. And ha in Hebrew is the word for the. And hirot has two meanings. It's very interesting. Mouth of the caves. Can you imagine? It said God three times in this passage has led them. And it says he led them to caves. A cave. Why would God lead us to a cave? A dark spot. I mean, it's a dead end. And they were helpless and they were stuck there. But yet you remember what happened. The way opened up, the Red Sea opened, and they crossed it on dry land. Hirot not only means caves or pit. If you look in the root word of the Hebrew, that's what it means. But in Hebrew, it means, hero means freedom. Have you ever been stuck in a cave and been let out from the darkness into freedom? It's hard walking through those places. And yet God is faithful and he never leaves us and he walks with us. So I wanted to share with you two stories. One story is a story that my life, of when I felt like we were pushed out, that my way was hindered by other people, by other things, and what happened during that time. And the other time was when I wanted out. I was like, hey, I'm done with this. I am ready to be out of this. So two stories I hope I'll get to in my time of talking to you. So Don and I had been living overseas for 27 years in Europe, and we had a lot of experience of working with different teams. loved working with them, saw God do amazing things, not only in the work that they were doing, but in the lives of the ones that went there to do the work, that God transformed their lives and gave them a vision for the world and being involved in the Great Commission. And we were real excited about that. And we wanted to bring that back in the United States and help them in the United States with the program we called WSN, Worldwide Student Network, where we would have our people in our countries go to other countries. So not just the Westerners, like Americans or English, going out and sharing with people, but the Albanians going to the Muslim countries, to the people from Austria going to other countries. At that time, it was just generally a lot of like Americans or English that were going to these places. But we wanted to see like these new people that had become believers that were from Muslim backgrounds going to the Muslim world, because God had transformed their life. So we wanted to bring that back. But unbeknownst to us, a lot of hierarchy stuff was going on and changes in the wind and things were happening. And so even though we had this as a goal and we thought we knew what we were doing, it was like the rug was pulled out from under us. You cannot do this job anymore. We don't think you're a good fit for this team. You need to leave. And it was devastating. It was one of the hardest things I walked through. And it was just like a whole job and our years of working were taken away. And we really didn't know where we were going or what we were doing. And I remember, it's funny, as I was getting ready to look at this, I do keep a journal. I have a journal. It's pretty thick. And it was a 9-month journey. I think of a baby being born 9 months. Well, this was my 9-month journey. Now, many of our journeys are a lot longer than 9 months. But I had not looked at that journey for 17 years since this happened. So it was interesting to go back and reading it and thinking through it. And God was so faithful through it. I hadn't remembered how faithful he was. So I was so thankful I wrote. I don't know how many of you happen to write journals or keep track of things like that, but it is a helpful thing to be able to have and look back and remember the works of God. So when I was looking at this, I was thankful because I did not remember that God had been so actively involved during that time. All I remembered were just a few things, which I'll tell you in a moment. But we were starting to look for a different job. In fact, one of the first jobs I remember my husband, and we've been in missions all these years, he looked at was Royals Roy. It's a job that opened up. He went on, it was called monster.com, looking for a job, you know, where to go. And so we tried to find a place for us. And over 20-some opportunities popped up, and we traveled around the states looking for different positions. And we thought we would live or work with various different things and people that we'd been connected with through the years and went to be with them during those months. But I remember writing a lot and learning about the storm. You know, how Jesus said, I will get you to the other side. There was a destination there, but he knew that there was that storm in between. He knew that that rocky boat ride was going to happen with the disciples in between. And I just remember I wanted so bad to get to the destination. What's our job? Where are we going to be? What's going to happen? And I wasn't seeing God's answer in that. But I remember it being so stormy, the ups and downs. And one psalm in particular that was so helpful was Psalm 107. It talks about how the waves go up and down and you're like the drunken sailor. And I don't know, when you are in places like that in your life, in the wilderness of wobbling around, you know, you just feel like unstable. The foundation isn't there. You don't know what's holding you up. But the storm was there, and God continued to bring us through and different things along the way. What I do remember is the only thing that I did remember was 8 words. I don't remember that I even remembered anything in the Bible. And I'm glad I have that in my journal, all these different things I wrote, because I don't have a memory. The only thing I remember is these 8 words, and it's from Psalm 56, verse 8. This I know. No. That God is for me. This I know, that God is for me. And I go to bed at night, and that's the only thing I could say. This I know, that God is for me. I held on to that. It didn't feel like God was for me. I didn't feel like my job was for me. I didn't feel like my team that I thought I was going to work with was for me. I didn't feel like a lot of things were for me. And yet I could just hold on to those words. This I know. Again, remember Deuteronomy 2:7. The Lord has known your wanderings. And even in Psalm 56, let me just read part of that because it's a beautiful psalm. You don't need to turn to it, but unless you want to. But it's a short little psalm. I'll start with verse. When I am afraid, I will put my trust in you, in God whose word I praise, in God who, in whom I trust. I shall not be afraid. What can mere man do to me? And then skipping down to verse 8. You have taken account of my wanderings. There we are, wandering again. You have put my tears in your bottle, and they are not, are they not in your book? Then my enemies will turn back in that day when I call. This I know, that God is for me. In God, whose word I praise, in the Lord, whose word I praise, in God, I put my trust. I shall not afraid, be afraid. What can man do to me? And then it ends with, for you delivered my soul from death, indeed my feet from stumbling, so that I may walk one step at a time before God in the land of the living. And that just held me through during that time. And I'm really thankful, because in that verse in Deuteronomy 2, where Moses talks about at the end being blessed in those 40 years, the chapter right before it in Deuteronomy 1, he talks about the Israelites and what it was like for them when they weren't wanting to walk with God. It gives characteristics. It says they grumbled. Now, how many of you have grumbled in the midst of these things? I know I have. And they had a wrong view of God. They said, and God hates me. It's the wrong view of God. And then they said that the people around them, the enemies, were too big. So they had a wrong view of themselves as well, Deuteronomy 1. So having the wrong perspective of who you are, who God is, can create that grumbling spirit along the way. And it was a difficult journey. But what happened for me in my learning process of this is I thought, I don't know if I hear really well. And I thought of Lazarus. You know, Lazarus came out of the tomb. Jesus said, come out, Lazarus. Then he came out, and I thought, you know, Lazarus was dead, and he heard Jesus, and I'm alive, and I can't even hear him. And I think I just missed everything, and I am not even discerning. So that opened my mind to start studying about hearing God's voice. Now, I could do a whole seminar on that, and I've got a lot to say on it, but one of the things that really surprised me on that, and hearing God's voice, Solomon was the wisest person. God said, ask me whatever you want. And he said, I would like to have, usually it's translated, an understanding heart. But in Hebrew, it's a shema, heart that hears, a heart that listens. We don't really have this word in our English language. Maybe hearken would be the closest one to it. To listen with action. It's not just hearing, but responding to it with action. A lot of people can hear. In fact, when I was praying with Cheryl the other day, we mentioned about hearing and prayed about that, because we could hear, but do we hear? Do we listen? I remember my dad was in World War II, the last battle in Okinawa, and lost a lot of his hearing. And so he seemed like a real quiet man, never talked very much, probably was an introvert, but we decided, five of us kids, to buy him hearing aids to help him out. So he got his hearing aids. And I remember he wasn't participating. And I said, Dad, what is it? Can you hear us? And he says, yes, I can't hear you, but I'm not used to listening. And I think that's such an art of being able to listen with the intent to not only hear what the person's saying, but responding. And particularly that comes to God. And so the thing I think of with this is the big lesson I learned in there that I needed to listen and hear God's voice. So I started during that period of time, I would just say from 1 Samuel 3, verse 9, "Speak, Lord, your servant listens." And I would not go into the word, to the Bible, until I expected God to speak to me. I wanted his word to talk to my heart. "Speak, Lord, your servant listens." And then he led me to another verse. And this is not some formula for you to write down and follow, but you know, God will lead you in your own way. But I think it was Psalm 119, 125. It says, "I am your servant," identifying who I was. "Give me understanding." So not only just to hear, but asking for understanding. And then 1 Kings 3:9 says, so God gave him a wise and discerning heart. And that transformed my times in the Word. It was just like the whole Bible opened up in a way that it just never had before. I said, God just so real to me and speaking and talking to me that had made a huge difference in my life ever since. So I'm grateful for that time of going through it, just learning how to listen better and hear God's voice. So that was that time. And again, I said that it was a nine-month journey, but it wasn't, it seemed like an eternity when I was in it. And some of my journeys that I'm continually on are still on those journeys that I'm wandering in and thinking, God, would you please answer? Do you hear my prayer? And of course, by truth, he does. Another story I wanted to tell you about was the time that that I felt like I was hindered from my goal, which I wanted to stay in the States and develop this program. But this one was, I was tired. I was weary. And I thought I was just like out. I want a break. Now, what is the story about? We had come out of Israel. I had been on the next to the last day before the war with Saddam Hussein had started. We didn't really know what was going to happen during those days. And we were a stability to our neighbors. And they would come by and they'd think, oh, they're still here. That means that the war is not going to start. And I love that. It made me feel good to give support to my neighbors. And I was in a very Jewish community, very affluent Jewish community. My neighbor owned stock exchange, or was at president of the stock exchange. Another neighbor was built a hospital. Another one was in the Philharmonic. We were there not as missionaries, because we couldn't be. I mean, we were as missionaries, but under the cover as business people living in Israel. My children were the only non-Jewish people in the school system, and I didn't know any believers. We did have teams up in Tel Aviv and Haifa and different areas, but we were by ourselves there. And so I was already tired of not being around any believers, any kind of Christian involvement for years. My children went to the Israeli school system. I didn't know what way to hold the notes. Like I said, you know, I didn't know Hebrew at all when I first got there. I didn't know anything about the holidays, didn't know anything. I had so much to learn. But because of where Israel is, as many of you know, it's a difficult place. And as we were preparing for war, the neighborhoods came together with meetings, and we were all given gas masks. So we all had our gas masks to carry. And my children, who were just first grade and third grade, would have their gas masks that they would carry on their arm, you know, to school. It's like a little lunchbox looking thing almost. And they'd come home from school. Now, think about this for your kids at school. And I'd say, what did you do at school today? And they said, oh, we had a bomb drill. Well, we all had bomb shelters in our house. You're just required to. But I remember they'd say things like, well, today the teacher told us that if there's any children that have died, were supposed to step over them and go into the bomb shelter. Because of the war, we need to get in. And we all learned, even my children, how to give ourselves shots in our thigh for chemical warfare. And so we lived with a different sense of fear and different sense of things, except for I don't feel like we were really fearful. We were all part of a community together. And but I was weary from the war and the setting up of it and the sirens that would go off and the preparations for it. And we came, we were planning on leaving anyway around that time. And we came back to England where we were, where our office had been. But in the meantime, communist wall had fallen. So now our organization decided, let's move our office back into Eastern Europe. So where we can go into those communist countries. And they wanted us to do the site selection and find the office. And they wanted us to move to where they decided the headquarters was going to be, which was Budapest, Hungary. And we were supposed to be, again, on the point team. And I was tired of being on the point team because in Israel, it was so hard. That, you know, you're on the first team. You don't know what the customs were. Visas, having to get a visa every year. And so we had such a hard time with 220% tax on anything. I even remember one missionary came to visit me because we could only have visitors like when they brought mail in. So four times a year I'd get mail. We didn't have, you know, the cell phones or anything like that. So four times a year I'd get, you know, people coming in and bringing our mail that accumulated. Supposed to write all the letters and send them back. Never got it done. But it was a lot of loneliness and being on our own and not knowing what we were doing. And then here we are in England. And then they tell us, I want you to be on the front team. Oh, I don't know what I was going to have. I remember one time I even wanted to have a friend came and she brought me a tube of lipstick. And I thought, oh, I've been praying for that for 2 years to have something like that. 220% tax, you couldn't afford it. You know, 220% tax on our car. I mean, everything, the customs, and we brought in carpets and all of them were taxed. So we just told them to keep it because it was too expensive. And that's what it's like being on the first team. You get, I guess I'll call it the shaft, just get everything wrong to you so that the next teams don't have the hassles that we do. And so I was weary. I didn't want to go on the journey. I did not want to go to Budapest. And God gave my husband a vision for work. Oh, we were asked to do Albania. So here's Albania, closed country, still under communism. And there were three on the team, my husband and I, and then one other person. And we're supposed to go in. And I thought, how are we supposed to do this ministry in Albania and move to Budapest, Hungary, and start and figure out all the taxes and all the stuff in Budapest, schooling. My kids didn't know English. They only spoke in Hebrew, except with us at home. And so, you know, what do you do? And I was, my husband went on a trip with his director to Albania, the first trip, and said, this is going to be a marvelous project. And at the end of the time of talking with my husband, he said, you know, our boss, he said, you have to move to Budapest. And I just went quiet. I thought, I can't do it. I am too tired. I'm too weary. I just can't go. And I call it the hardest 2 weeks of my Christian life as a missionary, because I really did think I wanted out. Like, and I'm so grateful I was in the Word, and I was in the Word, and that sustained me. The love of Christ constrains us. And so I was in Psalm 84. I'm just going to read a little bit of the first part. How lovely are your dwelling places, O Lord, of hosts. My soul longs and even yearns for the courts of the Lord. My heart and flesh sings for joy to the living God. The bird has also found a house, and the swallow a nest for herself, where she may lay her young. Even your altars, O Lord God, my King and my God, how blessed are those who dwell in your house. They are ever praising you. How blessed is a man whose strength is in you, who has set his heart on pilgrimage. Passing through the valleys of Baca, they make it a spring. So I was in this verse like this with God. Okay, God, there's dwelling. Do you remember that I need a place to dwell, God? I don't have a place to dwell. Here I am. I'm stuck between two countries. I'm getting ready to move from England. Now it's just coming from Israel, and now I have to go to Budapest. I would like to dwell too. Grumble, grumble, grumble. Then, the bird gets a nest in the altar. Well, you know, I'd like to have a nest too. God, did you forgive me? You know, God, I need a nest. Where's my nest? And, you know, we've rented all those years overseas because we couldn't buy in these countries. And I'd come back, and I'd be in these big houses, and I'd be with people, and they're like, oh, we're buying our second house. And I just think, you know, I would love to have that. Or it would be nice to have a dog, but I'm never around enough to walk one. I would like to even have some plants that I could water them, but we travel all the time, so I don't even have any plants. And, you know, I just, those things would build up, and I think, I'm getting tired of this. And I remember being in the van with my kids, and we were looking for housing in England temporarily before we were going to go to Budapest or asked to go to Budapest. And one of my, I said, you know, I really miss home. And one of my sons said, I do too, but where is home? And I said, you know, right now it's in the van, and that's where home is. And praise God, my flexible children. I've apologized. So sorry, you guys. I mean, I think it was probably harder on them than I realized of those times. But then I, you know, during those 2 weeks, it was just a 2 week period. Ron gave me space. I was just by myself. I just slept in another room and didn't talk to anybody. And I got in the car one day and I just drove and I drove and I drove and I drove as far as I could drive, which was down to Brighton. Otherwise I'd go in the ocean. So then I didn't know what to do. So I turned around and came back. And then I was on the phone and I was talking to my friend Liz, and she had become a believer with me. She was an English woman, and they had become believers with us. And I was friend Liz. That mean old director of ours, he wants us to move to Budapest. And you know, as a friend, you kind of sympathize. Oh yeah, that mean old director of yours. Yeah, that's right. You know, we just kind of do our sympathy in the wrong way, you know, that way. And she says, oh, that is really too bad because you have your heart so set on staying. That's all she said. And God's spear, his darts of life, his word went right into my heart and said, you have set your heart. You need to confess that immediately. And even while I was on the phone, I remember just saying, God, I've said it. And it's wrong. And he changed my attitude. And then, do you know how he rescued me? It wasn't the Red Sea walking out on the dry land, but he gave me a medical problem. And that was the only way they would give me an excuse. And I was standing in the kitchen talking to a friend, and I lost the vision in this eye. And I remember calling over to the clinic in England. You have these clinics next door. Hey, I have to have my eye checked. They said, well, we're just closing. I said, well, I can't see out of this, and I've got to go to Budapest tomorrow. They said, well, there's still a doctor here. Why don't you come? Went over. They looked at it. They said, you need to go up to the Royal Surrey Hospital. So I went up there. They called someone from London to come down that night. And he said, this is the second largest tear I've ever seen in 25 years in your retina. And he said, I could operate in a week. So he called his nurse in, got ready to mark off all these names off the list of people that had been waiting a year or two to get eye surgery, socialized medicine. We lived under that for many years. Just mark it off the list. And then I said, well, I have private insurance too. Oh, I could do it tomorrow. So he did it tomorrow. And so that was the only way I could stay, was by having this this medical reason for it. Anyway, we never know why God does what he does. We sometimes never find out in our lifetime. John Bunyan in Pilgrim Progress. He says, it's always hard to see the purpose of wandering, wilderness wandering, until after they are over. It's always hard to see the purpose in wilderness wandering until they are over. And it is. You don't see what God is doing, but his way is known, and he knows. He knows where he's taking us. He says, he is our dwelling place. And in Isaiah 40, it says that he rules with his arm ruling. He leads us as a shepherd, gently carrying us. So he either powerfully leads us through these things, or he gently carries us. And that he is with us, and he will never leave us or forsake us. Psalm 39, verse 4 and verse 12 says, he is a sojourner, a stranger with us. What a blessing to think this God of the universe is with us as a sojourner. So as we're wandering through the things that God has for us now in our lives, know he's with you. This I know, that God is for me, that he is with you, he's blessed you, and he provides. So while we're at our tables, that's what I would like us to do. And I don't know how much time do we have. Emily, is there about 20 minutes to be able to be thinking through, has God hindered you in ways that have been helpful in the long ways? Are you still in a wilderness wandering time? You need someone to be praying with you on this. Have you wanted out? Have you helped someone get out? Just a story or some kind of truth that you think of that you would like to share amongst yourself. Is that good enough?